This is Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. I am Zach Gandra, your host today, and with me as always is the inimitable Steve Gandra. How are you, Steve?
I'm finally starting to understand what inimitable means.
Inimitable. It's only taken you 2.5 years and 56 programs. I told you you shouldn't have got that Jesuit education. That's what did it. That's what did
you're
it.
The one that got the Jesuit.
I got a Jesuit. I got a Jesuit under or a Jesuit middle school and high school, and a Protestant graduate.
And now you're an underground.
There you go.
You know, intellectual.
Whatever. I like books. Anyways, we have, if you're listening on the radio on Clay 1180 AM, which we gratefully and thankfully get to plug every time we're on the radio, we haven't done a live recording show in a couple weeks because we've been busy. What have we been busy doing, Steve?
We've been busy doing everything imaginable.
Yeah.
Rediscovering our web capabilities, redesigning our site, serving clients.
Speedo fittings.
Getting things going. No, you're doing the Speedo fittings, dude.
No, thank God.
You gotta wear a Speedo just to show off your tattoos.
Yeah, if you are aware of the Gander family body curse, you're an upside down pair. So Speedo fittings are not necessarily the greatest, most flattering.
I've never owned one, I must confess.
But yeah, we are. I mean, we're constantly on the hunt to how to do our online marketing better and our content marketing better. And I don't know if you guys realize, but we have a huge amount of content on excellentcultures.com and beyond, and we're trying to make that more accessible for people. So that'll be fun.
It's so much content that it broke the last server. So
yeah,
had to get a big boy.
Yeah, and we're learning all these new tips and tricks to get content to our listeners and people that are interested in it. However, probably on a greater note in cloudy Seattle today is our special guest that we have with us, Steve.
Yeah, Michael Pierce has been a good friend for a while, and you know, he's a brilliant coach that specializes in the area of helping businesses increase their revenue. You know, if you're a novice to business, that means sales.
Right.
And if you're in business, regardless of what product or service you have that's serving your customers, more sales is always a good thing. And Michael is an expert on this. He's got years and years of experience. He's got battle scars from every kind of sales and marketing organization you can imagine. And he's kind of our go-to guy for, you know, how do you really help businesses take their revenue stream or their sales to the next level? So yeah. I wanted him to be on the show so that we could have this specialty content in the podcast. If you're listening live, make sure you can forward this on later at excellentcultures.com/podcasts. It will be up just after the show runs,
yep,
so that you can listen, yep, to all the wisdom that Michael has to say about how to increase your sales and improve your revenue stream in a really meaningful way. So
right. Let me be the first to say that it's not every time that we get to have a guest in the studio. Michael's in the studio with us today.
Yeah.
And let me say, Michael, the stereotypical salesman look is not what you look like to us.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He saying that for the listeners.
He looks extremely professional, on a beautiful blue striped, yeah, shirt with a baby blue sweater, and yeah, does not look anything like a sales guy, which is why he's such a great sales guy.
I'm going to throw out the fact, Michael, that your tan makes it look like you haven't been
well,
in Seattle.
No, wait. He's
recently
so good at helping his clients generate increased revenues that he spends a lot of time in Palm Springs this time of year.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Well, welcome to the show, Michael.
Yeah, I first met Michael on the golf course, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
We don't have an audience button, so we'll clap. We're really glad you're here. Glad to have you on the show.
So, Michael, tell our listeners about your practice and about what you do and some of your clients and your passions and what you love to do for them.
In terms of passion, it's, by the way, a great pleasure to be here. I do listen to the show.
Awesome.
As I know many others do. But my background, I was fortunate to work for some of the great companies in American history, Weyerhaeuser, Citibank, Boeing, Singer. And out of that I learned a lot of things and gained a lot of experience. And so it's now my turn to get to share those experiences with my clients.
Yeah.
And I find an awful lot of organizations are a little perplexed by sales. They understand the manufacturing process and
right,
they understand distribution, but they just don't understand sales or how to manage a sales group. And so coming in and helping them accelerate their revenue is a very rewarding kind of business to get to be in.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. And I mean, and really, sales because people don't understand what real professional sales is.
Right.
Has really gotten a bad rap over the years, and it's a justified rap because of some of the practices that are deployed from folks that don't understand that sales and revenue generation is, in fact, a profession.
I'll be the first to admit, since we can be transparent with the listeners, I hate sales. And consequently, I think I've hated sales in the past because I don't understand probably a lot of the things that you're going to share today.
Well, I think a lot of people confuse what real sales is about.
Yeah.
And real sales has very little, nothing to do with manipulation.
Good.
It has nothing to do with getting someone to do something that they didn't really want to do.
Right.
It's really one of the great service occupations in the world because I can meet my customers' needs if I do it right. And I was at Seattle Pacific University, a great local school, and one of the kids was talking about this sales as a profession and can it be an honorable profession? And we had about a three-hour discussion about that, and the answer is yes, it can be if it's done the right way.
Well, exactly. In fact, if you look at the definition of the term honorarium, which is typically a financial, you know, stipend that goes to a speaker. An honorarium is given because you honor the person who shared with you whatever they shared with you. And you're right. In fact, we love Seattle Pacific. The guest of our next show is actually going to be Dr. Rob McKenna, who runs the Industrial Organizational Psychology Department at Seattle Pacific. So make sure you guys listen to the show next week as well.
Yeah.
But, Michael, so let's go back to you know, this revenue generation theme. So many books have been written, you know, on business and everything you can imagine, sales, what have you. But there's very little understanding about, you know, exactly, you know, what is a revenue performance organization. You know, talk to us about that. You know, educate us.
Well, I think, you know, the world has begun to change a little. And I think that our whole ability to lead the organization is changing dramatically. I mean, we used to have hierarchical management because it allowed us to communicate, right? It was the way we communicated. I tell him and he will tell them and everybody will get the message. But today we have any number of ways to communicate. Some will tell us we communicate too often. Often in groups I'll hold up a cell phone and say, is this a tethering device or a liberating device?
Right, exactly.
And the answer is
and
yes.
And it can be either
while
one.
While I was just looking at my cell phone and not paying attention to our guest.
That's a great question,
thanks
by the
way. Thanks for calling me out, Michael. I appreciate that.
Well, it seemed to come to mind appropriately. But that's where we were. And today I think we have a different model altogether. I think it's far more collaborative.
Yeah.
And that's a little harder for people. When they've been trained to think, when they read these management books, to your point, Steve, it's how do I manage my time better? How do I do my performance better? But really, it's about how do we come together in a collaborative fashion to serve the customer? And that's a bit of a fresh thought, but it's how we do this well and do it to serve our customers.
Yeah.
Because I look at customers always as an annuity opportunity, even those organizations where they buy once. They refer people. They become a reference, and that's far more important today than it ever has been. So I talk to organizations a lot, salespeople. When do you consider a sale closed? You know, and they'll say, well, when we get the order.
Right.
Or when we deliver. Or when it's installed satisfactorily. And my answer is all of those fall short. Mm. A sale is really closed when it's referenceable.
Right.
Not that we would always ask for that reference or impose on them for that reference, but we know that it is.
Yeah.
Then we've done our job well.
That's huge. What a great concept. We need that. We need to tweet that.
We'll tweet it.
That is very, very right on because we're in the midst of redevising a lot of our content that we've, you know, utilized effectively for 37 years. And what seems to be most apparent in this season is that we've gone astray in businesses, especially in the Western world as Americans, because we've overdosed on self. You know, had the opportunity to listen to a brilliant, it was actually at Seattle Pacific University, a New York Times columnist spoke at the Seattle Pacific Downtown Business Breakfast not long ago, and he was talking about how what's happened to America and to our culture is in the 50s, Dr. Benjamin Spock, those of us who were around back then read about Dr. Spock and heard about him, a well-known pediatrician came on into the public forum and into the media and told us that our children were devoid of self-esteem. And therefore, for the next four decades, every primary book, every primary educational program, everything in corporate America was self-esteem, 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 self-esteem. And now what's happened is we've overdosed, according to David Brooks, who was the speaker, we've overdosed on self, and we've lost what JFK told us that really made a difference. It's ask not what your country can do for you, ask for what you can do for your mm-hmm. country. And it's all about service, you know, not about self. And what I hear you saying, Michael, is that real professional sales is about service to the extent that it gets past every definition all the way to becoming referenceable. And if someone was served well
right.
and benefited greatly from their experience, whether it be a product or a service, then that sounds like a good sale. Is that what you're saying?
That's precisely right. And I think, you know, years ago, I can remember there was a great Zig Ziglar was a great salesman, and he used to say, "Everybody who's happy knows 10 people, and everybody who's unhappy knows 50."
That's true.
That's right.
And there's some truth in that. And I think today,
yeah,
with the communication capabilities we have, the numbers are much greater than 10 and 50.
Right.
Yeah.
And we need to remember that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Social Absolutely. Media has squashed those numbers for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, if I don't like Steve or Michael, I have just on Facebook, I have 3,500 people that I can tell that I don't like Steve and Michael and how I was treated today.
Now so we know what you do with all of your extra time.
but the converse is just and true. If you do
if
like
I
us,
do like
there's
you,
3,500 people. There you go. And so let's work on that piece
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, Michael, give us, within that context, give us your vision for, you know, what is the culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement, you know, in the context of
Let's go to a break because I'm looking at the clock right now, and it was so good I didn't look at the clock. Come back with that question right after the break.
Great. Okay.
All right, guys, we're going on a break. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure, you don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We are back with Biz Culture Matters, or you are back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Okay, Steve. You were about to ask Michael a pretty key question, one of our probably most favorite questions that we ask our guests about business culture and a business of ethics, value, and how do you word it?
Employee engagement,
ethics, values. What's the
and
ideal
employee engagement? What's the ideal culture? Because Biz Culture Matter is a show about business culture,
right?
Which is the underlying root of everything that happens in a business. Michael just gave us a whole new definition for a successful sale. A closed sale,
right,
is one that the customer is so satisfied that the sale is referenceable. They're raving about it, to their friends because of how satisfied they are.
Right.
So the question to Michael was, within that context, what's his definition of a culture of, an ideal culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement?
Well, I think it's a really good question. Of course, our host, Excellent Culture, is far better at that than I am.
Yeah.
But I will tell you things from a revenue perspective that I see. And when I read polls that say 70% of American employees are disengaged, it concerns me. And I say, why would they be disengaged? What are we doing that doesn't make our employees feel they have a sense of ownership in the business? And I think a lot of it is what we expect out of our people. And so we don't necessarily surround them. Excellent organizations do, but a lot of organizations don't necessarily surround them with the skills to be successful. They surround them with the accountability reports. What have you done this week? Not where did you have trouble and how can I help you overcome that to be successful?
Right.
So there's a difference between, I think, management and leadership. And I wonder if we ought to just change the whole word when we talk about employees and start talking about producers instead of employees.
Mm.
Because if we worried about leading our producers, we'd treat them a lot differently than I think a lot of organizations do. And I think we do the same thing with salespeople. If we say to salespeople, one of the biggest mistakes I see happen so often is a sales manager or an executive team will say, what are we going to do to reach our quota this quarter or this month? How are we going to get this deal in to make our number?
Right.
And when we do that, I think it's one of the worst questions we can ask a sales team.
Hmm.
Because what they hear is, I need to violate the trust bond to get this deal done sooner than it might normally have been done.
Right.
And so when I now go to my customer and say, how can I get this closed this month? What do I do always? I'm probably a vast majority of the time going to discount the deal.
Mm.
And as soon as I discount the deal, I've done a couple things. One is I've told the customer I really had a better price than I gave him. Well, that hurts.
Right.
Two is I've trained the customer exactly how to buy from me last day of the month. That's a mistake.
Right.
Three is I've cost my company margin and profit and probably myself some commission. So why did I do that? What I really want to do is say, what is the stage of the sale this is in?
Mm.
And do we have enough logical prospects in our pipeline to make our numbers? Not to go to the customer and say, we expect you to do something that's against your culture and process to help me make my number. Don't violate the trust bond.
Yeah, one of our favorite clients to interview on the show, who has been on the show before, Jack Hollis, the vice president of marketing for Toyota, said what you said a little different way. He said that what happens with businesses is we get into business to serve our customers. And then as time goes on, we end up getting so focused on the regardless of the size of the business, whether it's the monthly number or the quarterly report or the Wall Street analyst or, the CEO asking for numbers or quotas, that we totally forget why we got into the business in the first place, which is to serve customers. And then when we get large enough that the customer can only be served through employees and many times employees at many levels, we forget that our basic mandate as a leader is to serve our employees, who then in turn serve our customers.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah, very well said.
Okay, so Michael, one of the things you mentioned when you gave that great answer a second ago was you talked about asking the question, knowing what stage is the sale in. So if I'm a new salesperson or I'm someone going into sales, which tends to be some of our listeners, what do you mean by stage? Are there different stages to a sale? How would you categorize that? Does every company stage where a client may be, a possible client may be in the stage of selling? Or,
well, I think there's a normal natural process where we need to discover what the customer's needs are.
Okay.
And that's different because we've always been taught our whole life the customer is always right. Well, the customer's really not right about his solution.
Right.
He's likely right about his needs.
Right.
So what we really need to do is spend some time with him discovering what his real needs are so that we can then develop a solution that would hopefully exceed those needs.
Right.
And that's the value of a salesperson, to say, you've brought to me a solution that is better than that which I thought was possible.
Mm.
So you're now a really valuable resource to me, Mr. Perfect. Salesperson.
Right.
So we've now understood what the needs are. We've delivered a solution to him. And now we need to work with him through his purchasing process. And so at each stage, if we're doing our job correctly, we'll know where they are.
Right.
And we ought to respect that stage.
Right.
So the customer is not necessarily always right in terms of what they want or what they think their solution might be or the product that is best for them, but they're always right with respect to their needs, correct?
They're really likely right with respect to what they need or want.
Yeah.
But frankly, they come to us because we know our product line better than they do, and we ought to be able to construct a solution for them
right.
that exceeds their wants and gives them something. They said, I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what I hear you're saying is that your concept of in a sales organization, so to speak, your concept of a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement is one where the values and ethics of what's best for the customer in the long run are not compromised just because we're pressing to hit our monthly number or our quarterly report or anything else that is numbers-driven as opposed to service-driven. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're saying. I think that we need to work hard, but that's different than pressing. Right? Pressing is sort of an unnatural work. So we need to be disciplined. We need to have our effort well-focused, but we need to be serving our customer.
Yeah, very well said.
Yeah. So I mean, that makes me as a possible customer / consumer, like I'm excited then to come and talk to you because that to me, that makes me excited. Remember, I was the guy earlier that said, I don't like sales. I don't like salesmen. I was on the phone with one the other day. I'm sorry, yesterday. And my favorite thing was he was communicating my need. And I said, I already know my need and here is how we're solving it. And we happen to be solving it with one of his competitors. And he goes, they are our main competitor. And his next question was, would you be willing if we could be, I can probably, if you tell them you're talking to me, they're going to give you a better price and you're going to be able to get a better price from them. And I thought, okay, but just, I don't want to have a 15 minute conversation with you over the phone. Just here's my email. Email me the stuff. Let me take a look at it. Blah, blah, blah. What are your thoughts on that conversation? Well, because you did make a facial expression.
I think we need to remember that we all think logically, but we buy emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
and good. So when he says, you know, I can probably match that price or do it a little better. We're not talking about price at all yet.
Right.
We're talking about solutions here that meet your requirements. Mm. Price, if the deal is the right thing, people will find the money to
That's
pay
true.
For it, always.
Yeah.
So let's not get into the price. Let's talk about how we're going to serve your needs
right.
best.
That's good.
And we're still going to do it as economically, as right for you as we can.
Right. Beautiful. Beautiful. I loved seeing your facial expression when I started saying that. I wish the radio listeners could have seen that. I was like, all right, he's got a point here. He's got something to say.
So one of the things that we're always talking to our guests about is the recent Gallup poll that you made reference to earlier about employee engagement. 70% now of our American employees are effectively disengaged in their job. New numbers show that 30% say on the poll they actually, you know, hate their jobs. And the most common reason for hating their jobs, sorry, it was 19% that said they hate their jobs. And the most common reason for hating their jobs is they hate their boss. So talk to us, Michael, about some of the solutions you provided for some of your clients that flipped that 70% disengaged number, you know, on its heels and turn it in a way where we've got committed, engaged, passionate, excited employees rather than folks that are just showing up to get a paycheck and then go.
I think, you know, largely what I see, often there are some easy things to fix. There's almost very frequently a disjointed connection between pay plan and expectations. Mm-hmm. Okay? They're just not synchronous. So they say, I don't know why my people aren't doing what I tell them to do. And I say, well, look at the pay plan. They're doing exactly what you're paying them to do, but you're telling them to do something different. So we need to get some alignment between, and that's a pretty simple thing. But people don't really understand often how to successfully compensate salespeople. Mm-hmm. So they say, why do you have this comp plan? Well, because it's what everybody in our business does. Is it what is driving your business the way you want? I don't know. It's what everybody else does. So let's try to get some of these things in alignment. The other piece then is to literally serve our employees, right? To treat these producers as they are producers.
Right.
So how can I help you advance your sale, your responsibilities, meet your goals and objectives effectively. And that's my job, to serve you. So I was with a person early this morning, and he said, it dawned on me the other day that when I was going home to my wife complain about getting 80 to 100 emails, that answering those emails was my job.
Oh, man.
Well, I think you're hitting the nail right on the head here. I
mean, totally.
If in fact, and I love your connection with compensation and performance. If in fact the goal is to serve the customer so well that after the fact they want to tell everybody about how wonderful their experience was, it's referenceable, as you said. If in fact that's the goal, then it sounds like the compensation plan of the company should be designed to produce that goal
right. In
that outcome instead of whatever other outcome might be redirected or reconstrued based upon people's human behavior headed toward the reward that they think they want to get for doing something that may or may not be the right thing.
Have you ever come across a company that measured sales in terms of their referenceability?
No.
No. Would you think that might be a reasonable benchmark? How would we design that?
Absolutely. Sure. You know, what a novel thought.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Have you implemented comp plans like that with any of your clients?
You know, I try to look at each client individually. I spend a lot of time understanding them and their culture, speaking of excellent cultures.
Yeah.
Because I often go home at night and think, you know, there's six things that we could do here that would really help this company. But culturally, they're only going to do four of them.
Yeah.
There's no point in introducing the other two because the minute I leave, they'll stop.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is create something that's sustainable and exactly. will serve them, that they will embrace and own long after I'm gone.
Exactly.
So that's all about their culture.
Right. Let's go to a break. We need to go to a break, and we'll come back and talk about what that sustainability looks like, what it looks like to help do that in different organizations and companies. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data. Not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
So we're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 and excellentcultures.com. We're talking to Michael Pierce, who is a brilliant expert in the area of helping companies increase their revenue in the, you know, primarily in the sales and marketing area. And before the break, we'd asked Michael to give us his definition of employee engagement in sales organizations, and he went into the connection between compensation plans or how people are paid or rewarded. and the behavior that you wanted being the outcome of that, with the focus being on serving the client so well that it became referenceable, that they were raving about it. So I want Michael to continue with his explanation there, because there's a lot on that subject.
Well, I think it impacts also on how we view those who report to us. And I wish we could all say work with rather than report to, because it's a much better concept.
That is, yeah.
But I see an awful lot of sales leaders or management people, and if we can work with them for a while so that they treat in positions differently. When someone walks into their office, boss, I need to talk to you. For an awful lot of people, it's, can I get back to you? I'm really doing something really important now. Or they listen with half an ear because they know they owe them an audience, but they're not totally engaged.
Right.
Or they're down checking their email while they're talking.
Right.
We need to get them to say, my role here is to serve this person. Because that's how we get from Kaizen, small incremental improvements, to transformation.
Right.
And that's where those ideas come from. So I can remember when my girls were growing up, I'd say to my wife, how did you hear about that? And she would say, because I was ready to listen when they were ready to talk.
There you go.
What a concept.
What a concept.
Yeah.
Was it, who was our guest, the hotel in downtown Seattle?
Oh, you're talking about Danny Fitzpatrick,
yeah.
At Hotel 1000.
What a wonderful way. I mean, just how you worded it, hospitality to your staff, not just hospitality to your guest. And I think the way you worded it for a sales team or a sales staff or a sales organization or any company, it's the same thing. And it seems like one of the hiccups, and you communicate to us what you think about this, but one of the hiccups is how do you get leaders in a sales organization? A lot of times they'll take a great salesperson who's doing a great job on sales, and they become the sales manager. And now they're not necessarily selling anymore. Their job is to help everybody else sell, but all they know how to do is sell. So what is the answer to that? Like they don't necessarily, great salespeople don't always make great managers. In the end game.
Well, I don't know that they don't. I think
gotcha.
We say that.
Yeah.
But I think way too often we take this great salesperson and we say, to the lions, Christian.
Yeah.
And he's never been trained in how to lead people. He's been trained in how to sell.
Right. Yeah.
So if we're going to promote this person to that level, let's not promote him to a level of incompetence.
Right.
Let's surround him with those skills and tools that he hasn't been trained in
yet.
Yeah. It's the same thing in companies. We go into organizations and we spend an inordinate, nearly all of our time teaching people the bits and pieces of our product. How does our product work?
Right.
Versus how to uncover our customers' needs.
Right.
How do you listen to a customer?
Exactly.
So when we begin to make some of those changes in how they view the employee, their leadership position, and their customer, it happens naturally.
There you go.
Well, what's really interesting, I just caught two big culture cues here. One is, if we call and view our people as leaders, as those who report to us instead of those who we work with, it changes the whole relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes the context from a team approach to a top-down authoritarian power structure, or vice versa. But then additionally, so I mean, just it's that perspective. Not, you know, who are my direct reports if I'm the leader, but who are the people that I work with is huge.
I get a lot of kickback from people I work with and individuals I lead sometimes by saying, well, we're going to communicate it like this. We're not going to call it, you're not going to report to me. Here's what we're going to call it. We'll give it in other words. And a lot of times their response is, well, it's just semantics. Like, it all means it. I was like, no, how we say it is. So what were the words we're actually communicating as a team and to our team members, how valuable is that? I mean, I think obviously you stated it, but is it just semantics, or is it of increased value of how we're communicating that?
Well, it surely is semantics,
right.
if we don't walk our talk.
Right, that's
and
true.
So if we're going to think about it differently and verbalize it differently, we need to act differently.
That's very good. And I think that's the perfect way to say it, because maybe they are telling us, our employee base or our team, that, okay, you are just saying words because nothing's changing. And that's a good way to view it. That's a very good way to view it.
Well, I mean, the words describe the perception, but the words also craft the perception, and the perception defines the relationship, and the relationship defines the performance.
Right.
So, you know, back on employee engagement, we're going to shift to a different subject here in a second. Would you rather work with somebody or would you rather work for somebody?
With.
You know, everybody would rather work. I mean, would you rather be on a team or would you rather, you know, kiss a boss's feet? Right. It was like my 10-year-old the other day, after got home from work, we went out and we threw the ball around, you know, because it was a nice spring day. And he tells his mom, wow, it was really great to go throw the ball around with Dad because it made me see him more as a dad and less as a boss.
Wow.
Now, I mean, how's that? I mean, how's that for wisdom? But it's exactly what Michael is saying here. Okay, wow. So we're gonna shift to distribution channels. You know, how does a company choose the appropriate distribution channel, Mike?
Very, very carefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's such a misperception, in my view, in the world of selling through channels. So organizations feel, and rightly so, if I'm to use channel distribution where I don't own the salespeople but I'm selling through a reseller, then world's very easy for me. All I have to do is give them the product and they'll go sell it for me. But it's not how that works. Mm. That's an even more complicated relationship because it's a voluntary relationship. They don't have to sell our products.
Right.
So most manufacturers, unfortunately, come into their distributors, dealers, with this sort of unilateral approach. Here's what we expect of you next year. How are you going to deliver this many sales to us in order to maintain our relationship? And my argument is it fails the win-win test. And so we need to be saying as a manufacturer, here's what I'm going to do to help you, and here's let's work out this plan together.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting the whole world's collaborative and nobody has any authority. You
right.
know, we need to understand the vision and, you know, where are we going together?
Right.
But how do we get there is a collaborative effort.
Totally, yeah.
And it's much, much harder in that indirect world than it is in a direct world where I actually have the employee. I can say we're changing our comp plan. So when people tell me, gee, we want to go to an indirect channel model, I say that's really a good option, but let's understand how much more complicated that option is to be successful.
Okay, so I just heard another huge culture and performance tip. Do our policies and practices pass the win-win test?
It's huge.
You know, get a little deeper on that one, Michael, because I think it's huge. I think so often business leaders are so busy solving problems and surviving and doing whatever they need to that they never even ask the question, is this action, is this practice, is this policy, is this comp plan, is this decision a win-win or is it a win-lose?
Well, it's just like making a sales call. You know, I encourage salespeople when they're done with their sales call to reflect on it. What was that I wanted to accomplish when I went into this sales meeting? What was my plan for this meeting? And realize that you probably won't always achieve it. But then you want to be able to say, why didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
And how will we change that? What did I miss? And how am I going to change my next plan to go see the sales? So we need to be pretty reflective. And too often, you know, sales leadership will say, your customers need to be your friends. And I say, nothing could be further from the truth. Mm-hmm. I have friends.
Right.
I don't need a lot more friends. In fact, my friends I have to work on because they're so precious to me.
Right.
What I want is a trusted customer relationship.
There you go.
And he doesn't want. And when I say they need to be your friends, then the sales guy says, oh, I need to take them golfing. Well, we don't close many deals in a golf course.
Yeah.
What I really want to do is serve my customer in a way that my competitors aren't. That's how I win the business.
Exactly.
Except you guys made friends. You guys became friends on a golf course. Is that where you first
yeah.
met?
Yeah, we first met on a golf course.
That was your guys' first date.
and Michael won. You
Michael
know?
Won.
And I knew right away he was an authentic guy because if he would have been trying to kiss up, then, you know, he would have sandbagged himself and lost, but he didn't.
There you go. We got to go into our last and final break. What a great time we're having today on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate, bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
So you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 and ExcellentCultures.com, and we're talking to Michael Pierce, who is giving us some tremendous culture tips for high performance in sales organizations and revenue generation. While I'm thinking about it, you want to make sure that you visit us at excellentcultures.com/podcast and listen to this podcast again and again. I've heard like at least a half dozen critical key culture tips that will make a huge difference in your business. Take advantage of the free Business Culture MRI. Assess your culture against the best of the best. Our mission with Biz Culture Matters is to help the good guys win, and if you're a good guy, you should be winning, and as Michael said, you should be passing the win-win test. So we were talking about distribution channels before the break. What I want Michael to address now is some of the trends that you're seeing that are helping companies be more productive and improve in this season.
I think the single biggest trend I see is the organizations, and I know this is going to sound a little faddish, but the organizations who've come to understand and embrace the power of social media. Okay. So I see organizations who don't understand the power of the web or of Pinterest or of Google or of Facebook or of LinkedIn, to name, you know, a couple of household names. And these organizations can play a terrific role in very precisely targeting customers and recruiting prospects. But most organizations put up a website because they feel they need to. And I refer to them often as an electronic brochure. And that's not what's going to get there today. So we need a far more interactive, a far more involved and planned execution against those terrifically powerful electronic tools we have.
So, that's a big trend. So you're working on helping a lot of your clients properly utilize social media and properly utilize their website, so they're not just a nice brochure, but actively get the message across and build relationships with customers.
Well, you know, what I find is there's a few things that I think I've learned over time that I like to share with people, but very few. And so I've really worked hard to find the resources I need that can do that. So when I uncover this kind of opportunity where it's a kind of a woefully inadequate part of a company's marketing plan, I don't try to fix it. But I can introduce them to somebody who can.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see a culture problem, it's not something I can necessarily fix, but I know excellent cultures can.
Right.
So I try to surround myself with some really good external resources that can help my clients get where we need them to be.
Yeah, great idea.
That's great.
Great idea.
We do the same. I mean, very similarly.
Well, that's why we've got Michael on the show.
We got Michael.
He's our revenue guy.
Yeah, exactly. We like to have the experts and that stuff in our back pocket. So clients that we're working with go, we can just, I know a guy. We can be the gangsters helping them get what they need to be.
Well, when you go to your doctor because you have elbow pain, obviously you don't want the doctor that sells you a bottle of water and convinces you that it fixes your elbow.
Well,
you want the doctor that knows a specialist who can get to the root and identify really what's going on and fix your elbow.
There you go.
Difference between professional approach and, you know, selfish focused on, just give it to me because I deserve it approach.
Yep.
So, Michael, what are the biggest challenges that you see most often?
I see people who've confused outsourcing with using external resources.
Explain that.
Yeah.
Okay? So we hear all this about we're going to outsource, and that's really a very bad thing because you're going to take your jobs away from your employees and you're just doing it because it's cheaper, et cetera. But the fact is that there are a lot of external resources who are available, who are really highly dedicated skills within a certain area that we can use and not have to own.
Mm.
And so I say, do we really know, we know what we need, we don't necessarily know how to manage it. There's an external resource that can help our company. That's different than outsourcing our company.
Yeah.
So we need to understand the difference between those two, and I think there's a lot of confusion around that kind of a concept in our market today.
So kind of win-win alliances as opposed to outsourcing?
Precisely.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think of the challenge for some companies might be they want to own it all. But it takes, at least in our experience and my short 4 years involved with Excellent Cultures, Steve's 30-some years, the leaders that we've worked with that are the most successful are the most humble to say, we don't want to own everything. We just want to be a part of the answer to everybody.
Well, and I think we can't own everything. And,
right.
I've watched organizations bringing salespeople on. And I say, do you have a process to onboard these people successfully?
Right.
Because if you just hire them
yep.
and turn them loose and they don't make it, you've lost a year
yep.
and over $100,000.
Yep.
Wow.
So what is the process by which you onboard these people and get them successfully integrated in our company
yep.
so they can be productive quickly?
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. So in today's complicated marketplace and economy, how do companies of all sizes drive business to themselves in a manner where even the smallest firm can look like a viable competitor?
Well, I think we talked about a little bit earlier, the advertising world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
We can now so successfully target audiences electronically.
Mm-hmm.
I remember not too long ago, I was driving the car and I was in Bellingham, Washington, and listening to the radio, and it was a company in Olympia advertising a retail store on the Mariners game. Now, I love the Seattle Mariners.
Right.
But I'm thinking, what are the chances that somebody would happen to want exactly what that retailer was going to sell, who was willing to drive from Bellingham to Olympia to get it?
Which is what, a 3-hour drive?
A 3-hour drive.
Yeah.
Almost nobody.
Yeah.
So he spent some money, probably needlessly, when today, with the skills we have today available to us electronically, we could have targeted our market precisely
at
a fraction of the cost.
Yeah.
Wow.
At a fraction of the cost.
Wow. So, Michael, as we're kind of winding down here, I want you to put your coach's hat on and tell us what the fundamental rules or guidelines are that every sales organization or every salesperson who wanted to maximize the performance and be successful within the context of how you've defined it today that they should know or that they should strive to work by.
So I think that's a really good question. And I think with all the radical changes that are going on through in our society today, there are some fundamentals that are building blocks that won't change. And there are some sales laws, Steve, to your point. And one of them is that salespeople need to understand that a slow maybe is extraordinarily expensive.
You know? Expand on that one.
Well, there are people who just don't know how to say no. And so they'll say, you know what, can we meet again? And we continue to meet, and we continue to have coffee, we continue to have lunch, but we never close the deal.
Yeah.
And we really haven't successfully matched our product with their needs, but they can't say no. And so while we're busy nurse, and certainly there's some percentage of these do convert to customers, but in the meantime, there's a whole wealth of people that could have been customers that we weren't able to serve because we were busy with the slow maybe.
Yeah.
So we need to know how to measure, and I think that comes back to the discipline of having a sales plan. Do I know that I'm moving toward the eventual goal that both my customer and I have? And I need to be able to assess that regularly.
Which is a referenceable relationship that's win-win.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly
well said. Right.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I think we need to remember always, the salesman, that people buy for three reasons. Form, feel, and fee.
Mm.
Will what you're offering me actually meet my needs? That's the form. And the feel is, do I trust you? Have I built a relationship with you where I think you're serving me in the best? And thirdly, is it a fair price? We always have to satisfy those three Fs.
Right.
I think, as we referred to earlier, we always need to respect the buyer's process. Let's not try to manipulate him into a situation that causes him to do abnormal things for us to win.
Right.
Those are critical, fundamental rules that are never going to change, along with this earlier concept we talked about when the sale's closed.
Right. That's beautiful.
So powerful. Form, feel, and fee. You can have the right form, but if you don't trust the person you're dealing with, it's all over.
Yep.
You could have the right form and a really trusting relationship, but if you can't afford it, you know, it's all over.
Yep.
But if you've got all three, then that carves out solid win-win relationship that is a referenceable sale.
An annuity relationship.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah.
Michael, how do our listeners get a hold of you?
They can reach me. My website is Focused on Revenue.
Okay. .com.
FocusOnRevenue.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Love it.
Visit Michael on his site, FocusOnRevenue.com. Make sure that you pass this podcast around to anybody who is in the business of selling products and services so they know how to create win-win relationships and referenceable clients. Visit us at ExcellentCultures.com/podcast to do that, or you can download the podcast on iTunes for sure. And make sure you take advantage of the Business Culture MRI, free culture assessment at excellentcultures.com to see how your culture measures up against the kind of cultures that Michael was talking to us about today.
There you go.
Gotta go.
Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.